So listening to strategy and future prospects of the business can also help you identify an opportunity. But now drilling it down to earnings, they say numbers never lie. For something as simple as the real estate investment asset classes within the market, knowing where the yield curves, something as simple as, is the government settling some of its debt? What will this mean to the release of cash into the economy?
Yeah.
Are we expecting to see construction coming up? The benchmark rate is going low, so likely people will be going for more loans. So does this mean they'll construct more? Does this mean uptake will be more for the already set up units? Something as simple as that can help you get a sense of direction of where performance might be down the line. I'd say investors need to have a long-term bias in terms of their investment strategy. As it is, if short-term opportunities do present itself, take advantage of them. But your investment strategy should be skewed towards the long-term.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Make Money the Podcast, the show where we not only tell you, but also show you what's happening to your money and what could happen. And as always, these are conversations guided by the experts of money that we do have here. And I'm happy, before introducing my guest, to introduce the topic of this week, being a special episode. We're in the month of November, and many of us like to think of it as Black November, where you're out shopping and looking for deals. Now, unfortunately, at Make Money, we don't have any TV screens to sell you or give you, but we are exploring the topic of identifying discounts within the investment realm or within the investment space. And I'm happy to introduce the guest that we do have for this week. And he's been a guest before. So I'd like to welcome you back, Mr. Wesley Manambo, Senior Research Associate at Standard Investment Bank. Welcome again to the podcast and the new look of Make Money from the last time we did have the conversation.
Thank you for having me. This is quite an upgrade, I see.
And we take it from where I did mention in the intro that we might not be sellers of merchandise, so we might not be having 70% off on any TV sets. And I believe for most listening and watching, you have enough screens already. So you might be looking for something different. And so we thought we have a conversation around, how do you identify a discount? Because discounts exist also in investing. It's not only product sale. To start off, you are a research analyst, so you do a lot of research, you write reports, you do a lot of analysis, you know, some technical work behind the scenes to identify this discount opportunity. When we come to your everyday investor who's engaged in day-to-day work, you know, they may not have the same expertise or time to sit and look at investment opportunities or investment vehicles to identify those discounts. How should we be going about identifying discounts so that when we speak of Black November, it's not just shoes, cars, or TV screens, and there's more to it than just products, so that we can also get advantage of discounts that exist?
I think there is no excuse for any investor not to be informed. We are living in a digital age. I mean, you don't have to read business journals. There is Make Money the Podcast. There are a lot of information dissemination that is happening. So for any investor, you should care to know what's happening with market performance, what's happening with corporate actions, what's the sentiment around the market and the economy as a whole. And this should help build a sense of opportunity and identification, and sharpens your edge as an investor. And for any investor, there are three, I call it the three trifecta that you need to have. You need to understand the macroeconomical and business environment. That's where is the consumer spending going towards? How is the competitive advantage, regulatory landscape, and how is the day-to-day running of businesses going about? Because at the end of the day, revenues are shaped by the day-to-day selling, the regulatory landscape, what's happening with the competition edge that a business might have. So that's key. Second is to understand the pricing dynamics, and you'd find something as simple as demand and supply dynamics. If you do understand what drives demand and supply, it might be an issue of timing that can create an entry or exit position, nothing to do with fundamentals at all. Second is something as simple as understanding corporate actions. When do they come? How do markets tend to price? Expectation of dividends, expectation of earnings, how will market tend to create an opportunity for you? And third and most importantly, I think, is investors need to learn not to be sentimental about companies. You'd find that it's okay to be sentimental about being a Sony guy or an iPhone guy, but when it comes to the markets, don't be sentimental about any individual company, but be sentimental with the overall idea of investments. Because if you are sentimental about investments, as opposed to companies, it reduces that exposure of biases. One of the biggest biases that may arise is you're sentimental about a certain business. You think its revenue should grow because of market reception. But as risk arises, then that level of sentiments will blind you to act on qualified steps immediately and hold on to your losers.
You know, you spoke of the three factors that help you determine a discount. So in terms of practicality of it, do you base your decision right around earnings to see maybe there's an expectation that company A has been doing so well, then maybe I buy well ahead of the earnings, because, you know, sometimes the results are always followed by the strategy. So maybe I might say, company A has been doing so well, let me buy their stock now so that by the time they're announcing their results come the end of the year, then that's how you cover that discount. Is it the approach here?
That's the approach. And even beyond earnings, there's something as simple as strategy. You'd find this is a company that wants to expand beyond the current domicile it has, let's say into the broader East African region. It means if they're getting out of their domicile, they are going into a market with potentially demographic dividends, which means as time goes by, they will mull more profitability and revenues from that market. If you look at it from a strategic point of view, you'd realize based on their performance 20, 30 years down the line to perpetuity, then there's value to be unlocked based by that strategic move of expanding regionally, or something as simple as diversifying revenues. They used to be a sector, let's say FMCG, that's fast-moving consumer goods. But right now they're thinking about moving into creating a prop book and moving into the financial services and a way linking their FMCG consumers and suppliers within their financial services. That's an additional revenue line. So listening to strategy and future prospects of the business can also help you identify an opportunity. But now drilling it down to earnings, they say numbers never lie. You can look at the trajectory, for instance, if it's a sector like the banking sector. You would want to see what's happening within the yield curve. Is it softening? What does it mean to earnings 2-3 years down the line? The benchmark rate is softening. What does it mean to earnings 2-3 years down the line? Is it creating an opportunity to invest now, or an opportunity to stay out of the market and come in much, much later on when earnings are softening? That kind of adjustments, they tend to create the value investor and the difference between those who win and those who ride the wave.
We will turn now to specific asset classes, and I would like to begin with the stock market or equities. You guys as analysts have quite the metrics or the terminologies that you do use to identify discounts. I think you use a price to earnings as one. Price to book ratios are also important. How can a normal investor like myself here, in this case, let's use myself, how can I get into the same lingo and understand these without maybe much complexity, without having to sit down and do valuation of companies or having to do some math? I can easily look at company X and identify, hey, it's undervalued, and at some point that means the value will be discovered and the share price will be rising. How can I still get to it without having the intricacies of getting into the math and working valuations and the likes?
I love the idea you're bringing about, because you're showing investors you don't have to go look into forecasting of earnings, get the dividends, the residual income, the free cash flows. There's another way to get a sense of value with the metrics you're mentioning, price to earnings, price to book. Normally they're called relative valuation, and it's for any investor or any analyst who does not have the luxury of time to make a decision. Now they have to look into performance, benching it with relative companies. For instance, the price to earning metrics, it measures how a company's earnings power might price it based on how similar companies are performing. For instance, if it's in the banking sector, you have 6 banks. You've seen their prices and you've seen their earnings per share. Now you're looking at another totally separate bank and you want to know, by this earnings, is it a discount opportunity or is it overvalued? You'd create a very simple matrix by using the averages to look at it from that earnings potential. But truth be told, no one matrix gives a clear picture, because you've only looked at it from an earnings perspective. Hence, another matrix like price to book, which borrows a lot from the balance sheet equations, asset is equals to liability plus capital. If you rearrange that equation to start with capital, or rather equity, it will read equity is equals to assets minus liability. And what it translates to is what you're worth is what you own minus what you owe. Now, price to book borrows from that. It wants to look at the worthiness of that business. Now, looking at it from a book value, when you divide that worthiness by the number of shares, you get a matrix we like to call net asset value. Now, if you look at that against the price, normally you'd want to get any business that is below a matrix of 1, because it means you're buying it at a discount. But then again, there are sectors where the book value might be 2, 3, 4, 5 by comparison standards. So you'd want to get one based on that specific industry. For instance, if it's banking, most of them within the East African region will tend to go about 0.8 to 1. But then if you look at another totally different industry, let's say tech, you'd find the book value is a totally different metric. But then benching it to similar assets, it will tend to give you a comparison. That's not the end of it. That's just another metric. Yeah. You'd find you're dealing with a utilities company, manufacturing company, which tend to be very heavy with debt. And you're wondering, a lot of money is lost in payment of debt. A lot of money is lost in non-operational metrics like depreciation and amortization, which dilute the real earning potential. There's another metric called enterprise value of earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, and amortization. And what it does, it looks at the raw earnings, what you actually made before treating it to depreciation, interest payments, your tax obligation, and amortization, which is more like depreciation on intangible assets. Now, when you look at a company like, let's say, manufacturing, they'd require, we've just seen a manufacturing company just the other day coming into the market for a corporate bond issue, which is a five-year paper. You can imagine over the 5 years how much they'll have in terms of interest obligation in settling that paper. To get the real earnings power, you'd want to see the earnings before that interest line, before that depreciation line. And that EV over EBITDA might be another good metric that gives you a complete picture. And I think for any investor who wants to see a discount, you'd want any metrics that is below the industry standard because it shows an aspect of discount to peers in the industry. But caution has to be given. Not all companies within a sector peers. Case in point, the banking sector. You'd find a company that is domiciled in Kenya, but within the same industry, there's a domestically significantly important bank with subsidiaries in Rwanda, Tanzania, DRC. So you'd find its earnings are not coming from Kenya.
Yeah.
Most of it is coming from a regional play, or its book value, half of it is from a regional play. So in as much as they tend to give a sense of value, you need to see and drill down to the most peer-to-peer comparison.
Quite a lot to digest right there, and I hope someone following the conversation can be able at least to pick out a few metrics that they can start looking at and start understanding how discounting would work in investing. We move over from equities to other asset classes. I'll avoid the classic real estate where you buy a buy a plot of land, a 50 by 100, and you get the average around the area and you think, this could be 2x in a few years, a bypass is happening, which is in a way, in a sense, also a way of identifying discounts in the market. I know people who bought land expecting a certain bypass will pass by a certain area. And actually, for those who realize that infrastructure development, they did see the capital gains out there. And if they're exiting now, they would be saying, you know, I still made a profitable venture in my real estate portfolio. Moving it now over from the stock market per se to more treasury bonds and other asset classes, is there a clear metric on identifying discounts in markets that might not be as formalized or as well researched about as, say, equities? How do you still identify discounts right there?
For fixed income specifically, there is a good metric called the yield curve. It generally shows you where returns are likely to be across different tenures of paper. So looking at the papers available in the market vis-a-vis what the yield curve is giving you can show you an opportunity of either a discount or actually paying a premium. So following those set metrics will help you. For fixed income would be something as simple as the yield curve. Going to the alternative markets where you'd find an ETF that is tracking the price of gold, caring to know the risk, global geopolitical risk, the direction that is going, be it investors are seeing alternative products to fiat being more acceptable, be it your Bitcoin, what risks are they bringing to fiat? Something as simple as, say, London is building its gold reserves. What does this mean?
Yeah.
So just tracing those geopolitical risk and global geoeconomical trends will help you tell generally where the direction of the prices are going to be. For something as simple as the real estate investment asset classes within the market, knowing where the yield curves, something as simple as, is the government settling some of its debt? What will this mean to the release of cash into the economy?
Yeah.
Are we expecting to see construction coming up? The benchmark rate is going low, so likely people will be going for more loans. So does this mean they'll construct more? Does this mean uptake will be more for the already set up units? Something as simple as that can help you get a sense of direction of where performance might be down the line.
I think that also offers more insights to alternative asset classes so as not to be too fixated around equities or listed securities. To move it over, I would like to move it over to a sense of something we have to tackle in this market where in investments, you find people buying high and selling low. And I remember a conversation I had with the now Stanbic Bank Kenya Chief Executive Officer, Joshua Igara, and he told me, when you go into the market to buy a cow, you look for a thin cow, and you hope to fatten it out, that at the point where you have to release it, then you'd be selling it at a profit. And ideally, that's how investment should be. But we come to a problem, especially in Kenya, where we find people mostly, you'll buy high and sell low. How do we move away from that, in that we are the people handing discounts down to others and not ourselves benefiting from the discounts of saying, hey, I bought low, you know, I bought something at 20 shillings a unit and exited even 2x or even at 30 shillings. So you've made 10 shillings per every unit you invested in. How do we move away from buying high and selling low?
Someone once said, you know, you're trading at a premium when your grandmother back in the village wants to buy that asset class without that advantage of having information. So first I'd say is get a financial advisor. That's the most primary need, because their day-to-day is understanding market dynamics, seeing opportunities. And if you get one with a good track record, it sets you on edge. But second, I'd say investors need to have a long-term bias in terms of their investment strategy. As it is, if short-term opportunities do present itself, take advantage of them. But your investment strategy should be skewed towards the long-term. You'd find an investor, let's say within the equities market, who invested in 2021. Right now, they are in deep profitability. But if they did exit in 2022, where the famous quote of catching the falling knife was largely spoken about in the market, yeah, they would have bleeded heavily. So you'd find, to realize the entry positions and exit position, trusted financial advisor will help you with that. And I also believe having investment strategy that runs on tested rules does help. There are 5 golden rules that I believe any investor should have, which states rule number 1 is trade to trade well, not just to speculate. Rule number 2 is fiercely protect your capital. Rule number 3 is take advantage of qualified steps without hesitation. Rule number 4, it says the only thing worse than being wrong is staying wrong. Rule number 5, if you're confused, remember rule number 2, which was fiercely protect your capital. You'd find an investor who's running on such set principles will easily be able to spot mispricings in the market, because you'll care to know, why is the book value so high? Why is there a premium? Are they getting into another asset class? Because businesses don't change overnight. I don't expect a business that was running on technology the next day to discover oil and gas, you know?
True.
To warrant, let's say, 60% premiumization. You'd want to care to know what's driving these premiums that we're seeing in the market. If it's justified, well and good. Because the alternative of just riding the wave is eventually they do come down. And it's only when it comes down that we know who's been swimming naked. Yeah. And again, they say during bull markets, that's where people confuse luck for skill. Because almost anything goes. You'll get into the tide, it's 60% up, get into the tide, you ride it to 65% up, you get into the tide, but then momentum as it is, at some point, mean reversion kicks in. And now when prices now adjust towards the fair value of their fundamental operations, you'd want to be in a place where the value of the company by price that you bought in is within the fair value estimate of its true worthiness. So anytime you roll by that understanding, I bet you would rarely sell low and buy high,
yeah,
unless maybe it's a need to exit at a bear market.
In the right context, I think I would have an additional question here. We've seen what has happened to the equities market over the last year. I think the last numbers I checked off my head is around 52% up. And, you know, there are a lot of people now wondering, do you hope the momentum continues? Do you exit? And I know you spoke very much about keeping a long view in investing and not just short-term opportunities. But sometimes there's a temptation to also cash in. You're like, hey, I don't know whether this momentum continues. I'm already sitting at an average of 50% or 52-55%, depending on the stock you're holding. When do you decide, like, hey, I was here for the long term, but I'm a bit afraid that there could be a reset that catches me out? Do you stick or do you twist in this scenario?
I believe stick to the rules. Just with the equity market case that you've asked, you'd find most of the returns last year, we saw very good double digits returns, but it was more of a recovery than a return. Because when you look at the benchmark index where it was post-COVID and where it closed last year, there was a bit of a lag. And most of the profitability we've seen in terms of uptick this year has been on markets actually pricing in more recoveries, and you'd find companies that are in the market, just look at the large caps. Most of them were domiciled companies, now they're regional players. Some of them were single business unit focused, they've diversified into other sectors or more subsectors within their larger sector. So you'd find when you think about the fundamentals, the companies we are dealing with right now are way larger than how they were pre-COVID. And beyond that recovery, to get to the fair value estimates of this business, there's a room for a rally of some sorts. So for investors who are in the market, there's still an opportunity within select sectors, something as simple as the oil and gas sector, telecommunication, specific investment holding companies within the region. I'm not very sure about the banking sector, given the premiums you're seeing on the book, the trend of the yield curve, and the benchmark rate within the country. Generally, focusing on the fundamental view, long-term view, will tend to reduce your chances of selling low and buying high, in my view.
We are winding up Black November, which is basically seen as this period where we are all exuberant about going for discounts. So forget the TV sets and the likes. We are to look at the investment world. What for you would you say is something quite discounted that everybody watching, listening should give a thought to? That investment.
Downstream players within the Kenya oil and gas listed, there's a lot of opportunity. Telecommunication and technology players in Kenya, expansion within the region, they're going into different markets which have demographic dividends yet to be unlocked. Now that's future earnings potential that you're buying with, which are yet to be realized. You'd find some select banking stocks which have diversified within the region. More earnings expected to come outside the country, within the larger region than within the country. So there's an opportunity to unlock future earnings. So select, without mentioning specific names in these sectors, have very great earnings potential.
I think this would be the third or fourth time on the podcast, so I'd like to thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
All right, great. And that has been Mr. Wesley Manambo. He's a senior research associate at Thunder Investment Bank, and I hope he's been able to walk you through some of the ways of identifying discounts, so that as you shop for every other thing you might be doing, don't forget that there are always discounts in the market and investing. That has been another episode of Make Money the Podcast, and until I catch you on the next episode, remember, make your money work for you. Goodbye.